Good evening. This is Mae Brussel on KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California, and it's broadcast number 602, June the 20th, 1983. A year ago this week, that was broadcast number 550, I was discussing the arrangement of certain people very important to the history of the past year, the particular configuration of Edwin Wilson and the Pope and Raymond Donovan, Secretary of Labor, and their travels in Europe and their crossing, their paths crossing in these various cities, and the interrelationship of these particular people to each other. Ronald Reagan had been in London and at Versailles for the conference of the heads of leaders of Europe, and then he flew to Houston, Texas, where he met with the Republicans and decided on the 20th anniversary of the murder of John Kennedy that they would hold a Republican convention in the year 1984 in Dallas, Texas. That was immediately after his return from Europe. Edwin Wilson, a top official who worked in the Central Intelligence Agency with Vice President Bush when he was director of the CIA, who was head of Task Force 157 with Navy Intelligence. Edwin Wilson was arrested that week. He was in Zurich. He had picked up $18 million and was to be brought back to the United States by way of Dominican Republic. He was arrested at that same time, and he had important connections to our vice president, who someday could be president of the United States, and he was linked to various activists in the Israel and Palestine, with the PLO, rather, involved in the Munich Games, the assassinations at the Munich Games. The Israelis had captured people that worked with Edwin Wilson, and Carlos, who worked with Edwin Wilson, was in Beirut, Lebanon. He may be there now with Frank Turpel, who's also over there. But Wilson was picked up in Zurich, and it's in Zurich where the gun was supplied to Agen for the shooting of the Pope. And in the past year, it's come out how Edwin Turpel, Frank Turpel, rather, trained him over in Lebanon for shooting and was allegedly in Rome at the time of the shooting. It's close to where the Pope was. Frank Turpel was there at the time. Edwin Wilson had met with members of the Justice Department in Rome and was not arrested earlier, and then the Wilson-Turpel connections to the Agen shooting have surfaced in the past year, but Wilson was picked up the same week that John Paul II was in Geneva. He was at a labor conference with Secretary of Labor Raymond Donovan, who just this last week was once more cleared for his links with the organized crime syndicate, which is impossible to clear him, but for the Justice Department, the Reagan Justice Department, or the Carter, or any of the others going back, all signs were clear that Raymond Donovan isn't tainted enough to be removed as the Secretary of Labor. As a matter of fact, the man who lied to Congress, and it was in the newspapers this week, a year later, Francis M. Mullen, M-U-L-L-E-N, wants to be head of the Drug Enforcement Agency, and he's the one who kept from Congress as if they needed protection for their eyes from the links of Raymond Donovan to the mob. So now he wants to go on and be head of the entire drug agency, and if the Senate allows it this week, he'll be cleared through that. But Donovan was in Switzerland, the Pope was in Switzerland, Frank Turpel was in Lebanon with his team, but Wilson was arrested. George Korkala, the third part of that team of CIA funding terrorists, and using Wilson, Turpel, and Korkala, men involved with the assassinations, going right back to John Kennedy's assassination, this triumvirate was to be closed in first with the arrest of Edwin Wilson. And, of course, he's in jail at the present time, but his cases have been hushed up. If you've noticed how quietly they've been hushed up once Kevin McCullough was murdered, a primary witness, it seems that we don't hear a thing about Edwin Wilson. His case is so high up that I think they're afraid to give it too much publicity at the time. But the known connections of Ronald Reagan to organized crime were illustrated through many articles through the past years. And as I said on the broadcast just a year ago and on the sheet that accompanies that broadcast, Ronald Reagan must protect and appoint the mob because they made him president. They used the assassination teams to get rid of those opponents in his way, Richard Nixon, was put into office after the murder of John Kennedy, careful strategy that allowed him in. Mary Jo Kopechne was murdered so that Ted Kennedy would be smeared out. George Wallace was shot and not killed. He survived that assault. Robert Kennedy was murdered, and with John and Robert out of the way, it cleared the way for Richard Nixon. And then, of course, Nelson Rockefeller was deep-sixed, and Ronald Reagan was in. The selected people, as I said a long time ago, were Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan as the presidents. And the role that the mob plays is getting rid of those people that stand in their way, while the international bankers and the top mobsters select who they want to be president of the United States. I was talking about those interconnecting links a year ago, and many of you might have seen the Wall Street Journal just today. I'll do more on it later. It's a discussion of Paul Laxalt, who is Ronald Reagan's best friend, former governor of Las Vegas, of Nevada. I call it the state of Las Vegas. It tells about his close relationship with Mo Dalitz, that he's very fond of Mo Dalitz. Mo Dalitz's home is where Robert Mayhew resided when Howard Hughes' organization moved into Vegas. And Mayhew at the time was employed by the CIA to hire John Rosselli and Sam Giancana as assassins for the Central Intelligence Agency. Now, Laxalt says, well, I may have had some indiscretions, but now that I'm running the campaign for Ronald Reagan or want to be president, I guess I'll have to be more careful because this is the way we do things out west, but this is an eastern view and they're unfair. I guess he's referring to George Bush and the assault, at least the cover assault on some of the crime syndicate that the CIA is running, and Bush's director of the CIA at one time would know. And rightly so, according to Laxalt, the CIA was involved in narcotics traffic itself and is continuously. So it is unfair to just take one potshot at Paul Laxalt. And he says this is a Western problem. Well, if the narcotics market is $80 billion a year, and it goes into every major city of the United States and around the world, it's more than a local problem. But this particular article reminds me of the cowboy and the rivalry between the cowboy and the Eastern establishment, picking on Paul Laxalt now instead of going, say, to the Nugent Hand Bank and the massive narcotics traffic when George Bush was director of the CIA. It has to be a total clean-up, and just pointing to one element is childish, and right now they're pointing the finger at Paul Laxalt, but he's got the answers. He says, you all do the same thing wherever you are and get off my back. And I'm sure that most people will have to put up with this until they've had enough. And then someday the crime syndicate will go all the way up to the White House and you'll realize who's running the show. There's several articles I'm not going into detail now. I just want to mention them so that you know I have them. One is Roger Arnold, a man, a suspect in quotes, who was never arrested, who's been charged with slaying a person in Chicago he thought was the informer on his case with the Tylenol scandal. Now, Arnold's the man who had the two passports to Southeast Asia, that worked with a travel agency in Chicago, and I believe that he is linked to the John DeLorean network, the Continental Bank, Illinois, in Chicago. He should have been arrested a long time ago, but he just wiped out a person that he thought was an informer on his past, and he's been charged with murder, not with the Tylenol murders, but with murdering a witness to the case. Also in the New York Times this week, there was a large story titled Murder Leading to Foreign Intrigues, and that's about George M. Perry, P-E-R-R-Y. I mentioned him a while back. He's the fellow who was the General Motors executive, the multimillionaire with his various connections into Zurich and Brazil and all over the world. Now he's tied to international narcotics traffic and conspiracy to sell cocaine in New York, identical to John DeLorean, also out of General Motors and a major cocaine operation going there. Broadcast 572, November 22nd, 1982. I was talking about John DeLorean. DeLorean was arrested the end of November in 1982, and 1 month later, just the month of December passed, and January the 8th, his co-partner, or a man from General Motors, another multimillionaire, was found dead. Now they believe that he was dropped out of a helicopter from upstate New York. I'll do more on the DeLorean cocaine connections, and I do want to do 1 hour on the links to the Tylenol. I think tie into that scandal and to the IG Farb and Sterling Drug versus Johnson & Johnson war. The National Examiner has a story. Marilyn Monroe was kidnapped and confined for 22 years. And then they have my picture there I did give part of the story of the role of Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy with Marilyn Monroe and the wiretap work of Bernard Spindell. I got that from the book Spooks by Jim Hogan. And they put in another person who I don't know, saying she's alive in Alaska. Then they jump to the second part, which I did, in fact, give them. And then makes it look like I believe that she is still alive. That's not true, and I have to get to them. I haven't had a chance to get to them. I just heard about the story and picked up the issue yesterday, so I'll get in touch with the Examiner. They never retrieve or change anything for sure. Now, there's a researcher up in the Bay Area who is doing a fantastic job of outlining the broadcasts that I'm doing, tape recording them and outlining them. And this is the way I see things when I plan the broadcast. I spend 10 or 12 hours laying out the material and seeing a linear connection between the subjects that I bring up on the broadcast. And he breaks them down into names and operations and how they link to each other. It's an excellent idea, and one of the sheets, maybe in a week or two, I'll put you a sample of an outline if it's all right with him. And it would be a good way to get a book out, is to have before the chapter, just as I do the sheets that accompany the broadcast, have these interconnecting outlines so people can visualize the relationship of one operation to the other. For example, he takes Helmut Stryker that I talk about and has him working for the United States and in the Russian front and the Battle of the Bulge, and then branches out to Reinhard Gehlen, Otto Skorzeny, the German generals, the OSS, the CIA. It's an ingenious way of doing things, and I think I'll copy one or two of his charts and send them on to you so that you can get an idea of how they look, and maybe I should start doing that each week. Also, Mother Jones has an article by Martin A. Lee, L-E-E, called There Will Be Done. It's about the Vatican. It's about the Michael Sindona, Reinhard Gehlen, the Central Intelligence Agency, the Opus Dei, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. It's a very good article. There's pictures of James Angleton and Gehlen and Pope Pius XII, John McConnell of the CIA, Cardinal Spellman, J. Peter Grace. Again, these articles, just as my research, should be diagrammed more than just a story that is told. There's so much information here that I'm sure nobody can remember these facts. What I do with an article like this is outline it. I spend hours outlining articles so that when I get this into subjects 1, 2, 3, and 4, I'll share them with you on the air. Many of you have it, and the reason I mention it now is get it if you don't have it. And also, I don't know if I mentioned last week, John Judge sent me the article on Princess Grace, A World Without Grace, 7 Unanswered Questions About Her Death. And again, I will outline that and share that with you, but I'm putting it off right now because I want to continue along with the story of Robert Byron Watson. I read to you last week a letter he wrote to me. I want to share with you this week a letter that David Wemple got from him, or information from him, and shared with me, because I want to follow a sequential order of this particular person who claims that he heard these people talking about the murder of Martin Luther King. And a month later, Robert Kennedy was killed, but they had been talking about Sirhan, the Patsy, and they didn't hear the threat on Robert Kennedy, but they heard the talk of this Palestinian that they were going to use for a job, evidently. And the important thing is the discussion of these assassinations and the people involved and their relationship to the present Western Goals Organization, to Roy Cohn, to the military. I've given you their names, the people involved in the military, and the files that belong to Larry McDonald. He's the guy that is chasing the Reds all over the world, the staunchest right-wing advocate. He is today the person who is screaming the most, along with one or two other people, but he is the hierarchy of the Birch Society. Now he's been given the control of it, the head of it, by Robert Welch. And I want to go into the background of the Birch Society, because Larry McDonald has been active there, and share with you some more information about Larry McDonald and the network that he works with in Chile and in Lebanon, because it is part of the international assassination team. Before I get into Robert Byron Watson and part two of that, I just want to mention three articles that were in the newspaper today, because it shows how pertinent these subjects are to the news every single day. The Monterey Herald has a large picture of Senator Joe McCarthy in front of a table, and Mr. James Wickstrom, W-I-C-K-S-T-R-O-M, is holding a press conference, and the title is Posse Comitatus Boss Claims Big Membership. And it tells about the right-wing militant group, the Posse, P-O-S-S-E, in case you don't have that, capital C-O-M-I-T-A-T-U-S. They're racist, they're anti-Semitic, they're anti-government, and they're against Ronald Reagan, incidentally. This article says Reagan is conservative as the man in the moon. Now, this group don't like Ronald Reagan, and if you remember, or maybe you don't remember, John Hinckley Jr. was a member of the Posse Comitatus. I might have mentioned to you privately or on the air that the time that Hinckley was in front of my house, I believed it was Hinckley. The Secret Service and the FBI put it off, but a week later they came to the house because a car that the license number that I took was registered to a friend of John Hinckley's who was a member of the Posse Comitatus that was in front of my home. This is a group run by the Life Science Church. It was formed 30 years ago in Minnesota. It's very far, far right wing, and as I say, it's funded by a large group of fundamentalists and small and large corporations. It would be really interesting to know which large corporations, such I'm probably would guess J. Peter Grace and that gang. But Joe McCarthy's picture was in the paper today. Then there was another article by the ACLU chief. His name is Ira Glasser, G-L-A-S-S-E-R. And he was saying that Ronald Reagan's policies are so far right, they're much farther and much more serious threat than President Nixon or Senator Joe McCarthy ever were, and that he wants to violate the Bill of Rights, and his primary goal is a different ideology than that of the current Bill of Rights. So on the one hand, the Civil Liberties Union is saying Reagan is farther right than Joe McCarthy or Nixon, and the Posse Comitatus the same day is saying Ronald Reagan is a pussycat. You'd hardly have to believe him. And the third article in the news today that ties these three together, the common denominator, is the Nazis in Germany had a riot. 46 officers were injured. 230 people were arrested. A group called the Conservative Action was active for 12 hours this last weekend in Berlin. Now, there is a constant resurgence of the Nazis. You may see it more and more in the newspapers, and my articles are just bulging with stories of Nazis. You see Joe McCarthy's name when Larry McDonald talks, when the Posse Comitatus talks, and you see articles that Reagan is doing away with the civil liberties. Well, where did this all begin? Where did it converge? And this is a subject that I've been studying continuously, how bad this situation is and how far back it goes. Now, I have a book I obtained called Hitler Directs His War. It was published in 1950. By Felix Gilbert. It was translated and edited by Felix Gilbert. And the interesting part of this book is that, well, one of the interesting parts is that when the war was over, 2 days before it was officially over, actually May the 8th, 1945 was official, the 101st Airborne Division arrived at Berchtesgaden. That's Hitler's special place, B-E-R-C-H-T-E-S-G-A-D-E-N, Berchtesgaden. They arrived there May the 5th. The Divisional Counterintelligence Office was to be opened up. And the fellow who arrived there found that Hitler's stenographer was there, the person who had taken all the records of Hitler's daily meetings at Hitler's headquarters from 1942 up through 1945. He was there. So the American Contemporary Policy of the Counterintelligence Corps, they call them the CIC, their policy was, they had decided ahead, was to arrest and send the Nazis to internment camps. But these particular people that arrived, the 101st Airborne, decided that they wouldn't send them with the SS to be imprisoned, that they were more useful to the CIC team, and they would keep them at Berchtesgaden and have what he said was a living link with Hitler. And this is important. The reason I bring Senator Joe McCarthy in is because if you have the back broadcast, I name the specific Germans who put Senator Joe McCarthy in to office, specifically ran his campaign when he came home from being in military intelligence in the Marines, Navy intelligence, and put him in for senator from Wisconsin and from Germany, going back and forth to Germany. They put up this money, and then Senator Joe McCarthy released the prisoners from Malmondy that were at the Dachau prison, and his claim to fame was releasing them and getting them all out to start all over again. So McCarthy is important to these Nazis. And the American team went in there and on their own wanted a living link with Hitler. That's what the word they used. And they had certain people like Julius Streicher, Streicher, who later was hung at Nuremberg, but none of the others were. A Dr. Robert Ley, L-E-Y, and it lists the people who were with Adolf Hitler's team at Berchtesgaden, including his sister Paula and his personal physician, Dr. Morell, M-O-R-E-L-L. I never trusted Morell, incidentally, and I believe that it was his account that Hitler was syphilitic, insane, and just incoherent. I believe that Hitler was none of those things, and that Morell was the liar, and Morell is writing the history later. And as the book says, Hitler directs his war. He was anything but insane. Well, Morell was working with the American group there, and on, they say on their own, but you, there's a lot of proof or belief, of course, that they had planned this a long time ago. And they worked with the generals and the household, and they ignored the usual procedures. According to this fellow, they had tons of documents, and they kept these men at their disposal, and they were free. And he said it was almost historic, almost historic. They were justified by the uniqueness of the situation. And then the stenographers came in, and a Dr. Jonashat, J-O-N-U-S-C-H-A-T, came back with a Dr. Kurt Peschel, P-E-S-C-H-E-L, the head of the stenographic service of Hitler's headquarters, and Herr Ludwig Krieger, director of the service at the Reichstag, K-R-I-E-G-E-R, and Dr. Edward Reynitz, R-E-Y-N-I-T-Z, and others that list them, the remaining group stenographers for Hitler, and they had sat in from September 1942, to April 22, 1945, and six were flown in from Berlin and Munich, and they were taken to Berchtesgaden, and they stayed with the stenographer that Hitler had, and the same team, and the head of the German espionage during World War I, Colonel Walter Nicolai, N-I-C-O-L-A-I. He was the head of the espionage from World War I, which means he began with Reinhard Galen's family when Galen was very young. And they sat with them, and he said these people had been present at Hitler's headquarters when Roosevelt's death was announced. It was an exciting experience to listen to those men. Now, there's a long story on the Roosevelt demise. I believe he was murdered, and I've mentioned it before and can do more later. But they were all together when it was announced that Roosevelt was dead. And it goes on, this book says that since Hitler had put Dr. Peschel in charge of making his original records of what happened, we let him continue as head of the group, and this arrangement worked out well, though it was not in accordance with the more fervent contemporary conception of denazification. I bring this out because in my quest for Mr. Fritz Kramer, Hitler's general, who Hitler called in for this prolonging the war at the Battle of the Bulge with his top aides, and the other aides and Kramer were at Dachau, and then Kramer disappears from the history books. Then Fritz Kramer, the general, as he disappears, the other Fritz Kramer is manipulating Henry Kissinger into Omar Amigau, where the top generals are after the war. And here it tells you that the historians had a living link with Hitler. They were not supposed to do it. It worked well. They had a continuous group. It wasn't in accordance with the denazification. And then this person, George Allen from the 101st Airborne, says, "The result was less than a month after these people stopped writing for Hitler, we had them working for us, reconstructing the period." Now, if the Nazis were to go underground, how much information could you get from these people who were writing their own history and intended to resurge later and put money into a man from Wisconsin who came back as the senator, and they funded him, and he made sure, along with John McCloy, who was making arrangements through the entire war with Alan Dulles, they made sure that these people got off. Now, that is part of the background of the history of what happened at Berchtesgaden. As soon as the war was over, 2 days before it was officially over, they were beginning this process. Another book that merges on this same point is The Background of Ronald Reagan. Where did he get so conservative that the ACLU thinks that he wants to do away with the Bill of Rights? The Conservative Decade, a book by James C. Roberts, describes the emerging leaders of the 1980s, and it was written in 1980, this book. He wrote it, published by Arlington House, a CIA press. Now, this book goes into the background, a lot of on the background of the conservatives in power today. But the one that I'm particularly interested in is William Buckley, because he worked for the Central Intelligence Agency in Madrid and in Mexico. He was involved with E. Howard Hunt, the godfather. He was the godfather of Hunt's children. Buckley has been an important spokesman for the intelligence community. His brother, James Buckley, is head of U.S. Information Agency and Propaganda today. Their sister is in the Central Intelligence Agency. Another sister was a roommate of Nancy Reagan, or a close associate at Smith College. And William Buckley's career is written up in many books, but it's very clear in this particular book the relationship of him to a power structure and how he got started. And also when William Buckley in 1960 formed the Young Americans for Freedom, on the board of Young Americans for Freedom, YAF, was Ronald Reagan and Colonel Charles Willoughby. Willoughby ends up in Dallas with the people behind the murder of John Kennedy. Reagan is active in the early 60s and 50s with these people and ends up in the White House as their selected man with a team that came from Munich, Germany, to Robert Morris. And Willoughby and Morris and Buckley all work with the Birch Society and with Larry McDonald, who now runs these massive computers with John Reese and Louise Reese and the Pentagon and high officials through Western Gold. But in this book, The Conservative Movement, it tells about Buckley in 1953, how he was handpicked by Frank Chodorov, C-H-O-D-O-R-O-V. He was picked when he was a recent graduate of Yale University to head an organization called the Intercollegiate Society of Individualists, the ISI, Intercollegiate Society Individualists, the ISI. And it was an organization that this author, who's a conservative, compares to the Students for Democratic Society, the Young Democrats. The only difference is that the money for one group comes from Germany and Eastern Europe, from not Russia, but from Germany and Vienna and Munich, and the other was an American homegrown organization without money from the Soviet Union. Now, in 1953, this organization was formed. And it was in 1951 when Buckley was selected to be head of that organization. And then he goes on in 1955 to form the National Review. Well, Frank Chodorov selected Buckley. He was a much older man, and he was from Illinois. Now, Buckley's sister was a roommate, as I say, with Nancy Reagan, and Loyal Davis from the American Medical Association, a very political organization from Chicago, Illinois, might have or could have known Frank Chodorov from Illinois, from Chicago, the same city, who chose Buckley from the East Coast, and the family is originally from Texas, to go from Yale University to head this organization, and Intercollegiate Society of Individualists. He handpicked him in 51, but the organization was formed in 53. In 1955, William Buckley began the National Review. And in the biography of William Buckley, in the book about him, it tells you the people that were put on the board of National Review that escalates it to Germany, to Vienna, to Zurich, to heavy politicians in Europe, and a Mr. Voigt, V-O-I-G-H-T, active with monarchists and militarists in Europe. So that Buckley was handpicked for three groups, one for the ISI, the Intercollegiate Society of Individuals, the next was for his National Review, which is really international in flavor. And then Buckley forms the Young Americans for Freedom in 1960. By 57, Reagan was already working with the CIA and the anti-communist leagues, the organizations, I gave you the letters of those, and with the propaganda establishment from out in Hollywood. So by 1960, according to this book, Buckley formed Young Americans for Freedom because with the defeat of Richard Nixon, and with him, the Eastern establishment control of the GOP, Young American for Freedom was formed. And, of course, I did the broadcast of the people from Munich who came to Robert Morris. Morris was head of the Senate Intelligence and the Investigative Committees of Senator Joe McCarthy. Again, Joe McCarthy and Robert Morris. And then Morris goes down to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He's now head of the University of Texas and works with the space station genocidal L5 Society out of Princeton University. But one of the key pins of this whole operation was the Buckley family and handpicked from Illinois, first with one organization, then with his National Review, then Young Americans for Freedom, which brings in the conservative Ronald Reagan, Nancy Davis Reagan. She latches onto him out there in Hollywood and is behind and pushes this conservatism as if he needed pushing, but she seems to be as much a control as the Popessa. I haven't read the book yet. I've heard a lot about it. But Nancy Reagan is a very powerful woman, and Buckley was picked by somebody in Illinois, and the Buckley family were associated with Nancy Davis, goodness knows, in Chicago, as I say, the context there. But in this book, it tells how Ronald Reagan surfaced in 1964. At the time, he gave a speech for Barry Goldwater, but he said that, among the others, he was known to all of them before. He didn't really surface and come to the attention of most conservatives till 1964, but he had a strong role before that. I'll take a one-minute break now and go back to these forces of Germany, the Germans, as I say, behind Senator Joe McCarthy, the continuation of the German process, and how they all converge in 1983 with Larry McDonald of the Birch Society, the military, and the list of people that are sent out to 50 police departments around the United States and also with their offices in Germany at the present time.